Welcome to the Religious Studies Project, hosted by Christopher Cotter and myself, David Robertson. This podcast is produced in association with the British Association for the Study of Religions, and you can visit our website at www.religiousstudiesproject.com.
What is the public benefit of the academic study of religion? Bettina Schmidt.
The British Association for Study of Religion we organized in the conference in 2012 a panel about the public benefit of the study of religion. Is an association where most of our members are involved in research, either being a research student or supervising research students or being actively involved in research projects about various issues in the area of religion. Therefore, the discussion about the public benefit is of importance for the British Association for Study of Religion as well as other associations. This is why this panel was organized in cooperation with also the sociologists of religion here in the UK, who are also engaged with the problem about thinking and discussing the public benefit of religion. When we look at how we do research, either we apply for funding to the British Academy or one of the research councils here in the UK. The second aspect is also that universities here in the UK are assessed about the quality of research. And so we, as scholars working in universities are also then later on peer reviewed again about our research. So we have two different ways where our research is peer reviewed, either by the research councils or then later on the outcome of our research in the research assessment. And at the last research assessment, 2008, the debate started that the government or the wider society wanted to know what we are doing, what is the value for money for our research. So it started a debate, probably in departments of natural science and social science, but then later also in humanities, about the value for money for the government and for the wider public. So after the last research assessment, more and more the research council started to ask applicants to explain the impact of their research for the wider society. So in every research application, we have already now to explain the impact of our research for society. However, also now the next research assessment, which takes place 2014, will also assess the impact of all our research for the society or for certain groups of the society. We have, therefore, to discuss and take the request of the public to explain the benefit of our research quite seriously. However, there is controversy. While for certain scholars, public benefit is about money, what brings it in money value. In humanities, we have a much broader approach to the whole aspect of public benefit. So in the next research assessment, the REF, the panel D, which is a panel for all disciplines in the area of humanities, we have taken quite a broad approach to the idea of what constitutes benefit or impact of our research. So it's not only about solutions to help with climate change or to find medicine for an illness. Benefit has something to do with communicating our research ideas and the important, the value of our research to the wider public, the non-academic public to a certain degree, but not only. So it is about influencing the society, showing that certain ideas are important and also to educate groups of society about the values of our research. This all has something to do with showing the public benefit of the study of religion. And so the idea for the panel came when Abby Day, the current president of the British Society for Sociology of Religion, asked me to organize a panel together. I speak as the secretary for the British Association for Study of Religion and Abby for the Sociologist of Religion here in the UK, and we wanted to show the connection between our two societies. So we sent out the call for papers to our two mailing lists, and so two members of the two associations. And we got together a group to present their own research in a positive way in order to show the importance of engaging with the public. However, as one panelist quite dramatically showed, also the negative aspects that to speak out for religious community or for religious beliefs can also create negative reactions within the wider public, even within their own university, their own academic area, which is also an important part of what we want to communicate, to inform the public about our research, has also sometimes a dangerous aspect in it. This does not mean that we shouldn't do it, quite the opposite. But it shows that by communicating perhaps unpopular elements and aspects, we start a critical debate, which then changes, hopefully, the public acceptance of different belief systems. And so I thought the bring the two groups together by organizing this panel. It's a good way to show that we are both associations work on the same topic, religion, with perhaps different methods, but we engage with the same audience. Therefore, we work, hopefully, also in the future together. And perhaps let me close my contribution by showing again how important it is that, in particular, young scholars, but every scholar at every age, we have to realize that research cannot longer be done only in a library or over sitting at a computer and writing something. From the first moment of starting a research idea, developing research idea to a research project, we have to think about how to communicate the outcome of the research we want to establish to a non-academic audience. So scholarship can no longer be done alone on a desk. We have to make sure that scholarship is always an engaged scholarship, whether it's engaged sociology or engaged study of religion. We engage with people we research with, but also with people who understand nothing about our research, but we have to communicate our understanding, our outcome, what we find in our research project to this other audience, not the academic audience, but also the wider, the public audience. And this is part of what I find is important, showing young scholars the idea of engaging academic research and engaging scholarship. In the 1970s, in anthropology, there was a phase of action anthropology, which became quite popular, particularly in North America, but then phased out because from the beginning there was a problem with action anthropology. people were still thinking about that they knew better and wanted to show the local communities how to do things. And this does not work. And so this was a phase in anthropology, it's no longer the case. However, the debate about impact will stay. I'm absolutely certain that whether it is now or in 10 years or 20 years, we have to make sure that our research has a benefit, whether it is collecting information and knowledge and broaden the understanding about concepts such as spirit possession or exorcism or voodoo, but also benefit about changing policies, changing understanding of what is important in our world.
Nick Campion.
Well, I think the potential benefit is huge. I mean, I've got to say, unfortunately, at the moment, I think the academic discipline of the study of religions has had almost no impact on public attitudes. And I would make one possible exception, which is the INFORM seminars at the LSE, mm-hmm. because there does seem to have been, I think, a rolling back of the notion of certain religious movements being cults and cults necessarily being dangerous. That seems to be rolled back, and so the indication there of study of religions influencing the public view. But in general, I find that there's a huge amount of prejudice and stereotyping out there about religion amongst educated people as much as uneducated, in fact probably more so amongst educated people. Massive stereotyping encouraged by the current atheist attack on religion as much as by Christian fundamentalism and Islamic fundamentalism and so on. And these phenomena are in fact very diverse and complex, and I would like to see the study of religion as academics represented far more strongly in the media. I'm alarmed at the extent to which the BBC, Radio 4, for example, if it discusses a religious question, will normally have a Church of England bishop on one side and Richard Dawkins or a Dawkins acolyte on the other. It's a ridiculous caricature of the situation. The resulting discussion is useless, and so study of religions, I think, out of all the disciplines that are practiced in our modern universities, deserves to have a much higher profile.
Gordon Melton.
Well, I think the what we gain from religious studies is knowledge of very, very important aspect of our life that was discounted for so long. As the secularization hypothesis came along, we projected a future without religion, and so we had for three or four generations a lot of studies of human culture and human life that simply left religion out of the equation because it was a dying epiphenomenal aspect. We're now quite aware that that's not the case, that religion is making a comeback. We're even predicting that in Europe it's coming back in part because of the religious families have more children, and so religion's getting passed on at a much higher rate, and within another generation the downward trends in religion should reverse even in Europe. But everywhere else, religion is so obviously an important factor. And in the kind of multicultural, multi-religious world we live in, religious studies is the main discipline that provides some understanding that is not so totally integrated with a single religious perspective. So we can kind of get a bird's eye view of what's happening in religious communities around the world, how religions can interact with each other without throwing bricks, those kinds of things. So those are the main values that come out of religious studies. Like any of the academic disciplines, there's always a benefit of knowledge for knowledge's sake, and there are unintended consequences of just studying things that seem to have no practical application this week. But in religious studies, as with any field, there are things that have practical application immediately. And so we need to be aware of what's going on in the world religiously and how they affect the lives of cultures in which they operate, and then how they affect the life of the whole world as they interact.
Kim Knott.
I mean, there are many, many aspects to this, and obviously I think scholars of religion can contribute to really making sense of an area where there's been a great deal of illiteracy. So it's been problematic, I think, in recent decades that so little is known by public servants, officials, people at local, national, and national level about religion, because often it had been assumed to be in decline and therefore of no, and also of no social significance. That's obviously been challenged. But I would say that one of the areas where scholars of religion can make a big difference is to raise questions about the relationship between the religious and the secular. And really, because I'm interested in it, to interrogate the nature of the secular spaces, the things that we take for granted, the tacit taken for grantedness of the public domain as a non-religious space.
Mm.
Not because I want to find religion in every nook and cranny, but because I think we don't really understand much about the nature of contemporary non-religious culture. We don't understand, we don't often, maybe we're beginning more now to have an understanding about what people value, what public values we have. We may be thinking about multiculturalism has helped us to think about that, thinking about equality and diversity and the legislation associated with them is helping us to think about that. But scholars of religion have the tools and the experience to think about those arenas of belief, ideology, value, practice, ritual, the sacred, what constitutes things that are held to be dear and inviolable and non-negotiable in society. And so we actually really have something very positive to offer, which I think scholars from some other disciplines are not well placed to offer. So that would be my short answer.
Tim Jensen.
Well, my starting point would be that I presume, or I take as given, that we nowadays live in a society that, at least ever since Enlightenment time, has decided that science and scientifically grounded knowledge about things human, things social, and things natural is important, is a public benefit, so to speak, is a value to the common good, not only for building bridges, but simply for also knowing more about our past and our predecessors and other countries, and about the mechanisms of society, etc., etc. And having said that, I will say, well, according to my understanding of religion, religion is something human, social, and natural. It's part of history, past, and present. So if we say that we want to have scientifically grounded knowledge of all of this, then we will also have to include religion. It's part of it. And though I agree that religion is not something sui generis, I still think that there is a good reason for having separate study of religious departments and for a specific field called the study, scientific study of religions, including history of religions, comparative religions, etc., etc. And I think that if society, if the state then says scientifically grounded knowledge is a value, then they will also have to say scientifically grounded knowledge of religion is a value. And therefore, they will have to establish a study of religions departments. And these departments will then have the task of providing that scientifically grounded knowledge about religion. Now, then I want to add that they can then disseminate their results sort of within the ivory tower in academic journals and books and read each other's work. But I also think, and then this also might be because of my personal sort of ideology actually, aspirations, but it's also part of the Danish University Act, that the scholar is somehow obliged to also, one way or the other, share with the wider community, that is society at large, his or her results. Now, I don't think that we are all going to be sort of popularizing all of the time, that we're all going to do this or that, but I think that it is a nice idea to think that some scholars do not think that they should only publish for peers. And then there are many ways of sharing knowledge with the wider society. And what I have discovered is that some of these ways are probably more risky than others. Risky also to the benefit, so to speak, of the academic study religion, because it is supposed to be sort of value-free, at least, and objective. That is what we try to be. And the minute you sort of share with the wider community via, for instance, mass media, you cannot control everything. Mm-hmm. And sometimes what you are doing will be seen as if you are politicizing instead of, etc., and just maybe abusing your title, etc. Anyway, I think that one of the main sort of venues for sharing our study of religions-based knowledge is through the public schools, and that is via religion education. Mm-hmm. And I think for many reasons, scholars within the academic study of religion ought be interested in linking up with what is happening in public schools, and therefore supporting secular study of religions-based religion education in all public schools. Not that I think religion education can save the world or pave the way for tolerance and world peace, but I simply think that, if an educational system considers knowledge of importance, then there must also be knowledge about religion. And I will actually go so far to say that my definition of a secular state includes that this secular state can look on religion and religion education as a normal sort of subject for science and as a normal subject for education and teaching. So it should be a very normal school subject next to all the others with exams and everything like that. So that's one venue, and there you can sort of also take another thing, and you can teach and educate the teachers for religion education. Who else can do it? If we want to provide a secular, balanced study of religions, sort of second-order discourse in society, there is only one place you can go, and that is the study of religions department. And I will then add to this that I consider it of importance not just because I believe in science or knowledge, but also because I think that some of the scientifically or intraspecific scientific values, say knowledge is a good, that this value is also linked historically and logically with some, let's call it, political values, pluralism, democracy, and open society. And I consider it absolutely necessary for a secular, open society to have, well, space for religious voices, but also have voices coming out of a discourse that is a second-order discourse on religion. We cannot have one or all religion decide how to talk about religion in the public square. Mm-hmm. We have to sort of develop what Taylor and others call sort of a common mind. And I think therefore we have to develop a second-order discourse on religion. And that discourse is a discourse that is, of course, analytical and critical. So when we provide sort of study of religions-based knowledge about religion, we provide future citizens with competences, skills, so that they can analytically, sophisticatedly, so to speak, criticize and relate to all other discourses on religion. In that way, we also help create, you know, emancipated, let's call it, self-governing citizens. And I think this is also important if we at all believe in democracy. And then finally, I would say that you could also point to the benefit of the study of religions and knowledge about religions if you look at professional things, if you look at vocations in today's world. Doctors, nurses, police officers, diplomats, you name it. soldiers, they all need to have some knowledge of religion, whether they go outside of their own country or whether they stay. We live in a globalized world, multicultural and multi-religious. So in order to be sort of well-educated, but also in order to perform your profession in a professional manner, you need to know something about religion.
Marion Bowman.
I think there are many public benefits and benefits to the public, if I can put it that way, of the study of religion. Why should the public be interested in the study of religion? I would say, if you don't understand how different people are seeing the world, you don't begin to understand politics, economics, world affairs, and more to the point, you don't understand what might happen. You don't understand the consequences of the fact that people are seeing this world that we share in very different ways. So the public benefit of the study of religion, and the study of religion in its fullest and broadest sense, I would have to add, is to share an understanding of the rules by which some people live, the way some people think the world is constituted, what regulates and controls certain behaviours, what gives people a vision of how they are supposed to act in the world. But that has to be a realistic one. The study of religion has almost equal dangers. One is that such a fluffy and positive picture of religion as a purely positive force will be painted, that it's miles away from the reality of what happens, which is that what we'll broadly call religious traditions, religion, can have both extremely beneficial effects, but can also cause the most terrible human problems and disasters to occur. At the other end, there is the danger that if people think they can simply dismiss religious behaviour as something that only foolish, deluded people do, then they underestimate the force that religion is in the world. And so I believe that the public benefit of studying religion is so that we can not only understand what's happening in the world, but we as scholars then do have the duty, I think, to communicate that so that people understand that for many people, religious belief isn't an optional extra. It's not some daft idea that they keep in a closet. It is actually what controls the way they are in the world in everyday life.
Which are Hanegraaff.
A colleague of mine a couple of months ago made a remark which struck me. He said, because we were talking about the bad reputation that the humanities are having nowadays in general society, especially because of the economic crisis, this notion that people in the humanities are just using taxpayers' money to do research on things that nobody needs, to just summarize it. So how do we defend ourselves against this notion, which I think is preposterous? And this colleague of mine said, we were talking about this, and he said, you know, it's such a strange thing. I have to defend myself when I say that I'm reading a lot. When I say that I'm writing, the people say, okay, you're producing something, and that's fine. But that you are, that when I say I spend a lot of my time being paid of my salary to read, and people have a notion, the general population has a notion like, well, reading you do in your free time, you don't do it in your working time. And that's ridiculous, because how can we possibly be creative as writers and as scholars if we don't take the time to read sources and scholarship? That's part of our work. This is something that I noticed, and let me give a concrete example. Egil Aspem, a Norwegian scholar who is finishing his dissertation with me in Amsterdam, wrote a very good article on the tragedy of the mass murder of Breivik, and he showed what scholars of religion have to say about this topic, and he showed how relevant the study of religion is. Then I noticed this is a very good article, people should read it, the general population should read it. But they cannot, because it is not open access. It's an, it is in a peer-reviewed journal, and if for example, Egel would be interviewed by a newspaper, they would say, okay, I want to read it, so the population wants to read it. Well, they would not be able to get access to the article. This wasn't, this made the penny drop for me, that we have to reach out much more actively than we have been doing. We are protecting ourselves behind peer-reviewed journals. I'm a big defender of peer review, but I do think that research should be much more accessible to the general population. And even if an article like that is not accessible, we should do other things. Use blogs, etc., to go out there and show, guys, this is what we're doing, this is why it's important what we're doing. Because we have a lot to contribute. The study of religion, to use this example, can really contribute to understanding how these kind of extreme right-wing groups are developing, what the potential threat they might have for society, where it comes from, and how we can contribute as scholars of religion towards, in this case, national security. And there are many other examples like this. A lot of religion, a lot of that's happening in the world. If you read in newspapers, most conflicts have to do with religion, one way or another. I don't think you could quantify this easily, but an enormous amount of conflicts worldwide are based on religious conflicts, one way or another. So this is obviously something that where scholars of religion have something to contribute to society. Maybe we are not doing it enough. Maybe we are not reaching out efficiently enough. But we should actually be on the front row in the public debate about these issues.
Naomi Goldenberg.
I think by the academic study of religion, you might be meaning the vigorous study of various texts? Do you mean the non-confessional study of religious texts, practices, traditions? Do you mean a kind of objective study? Of course, objective is a very problematic view. I think there's enormous value here because, as I mentioned in the earlier part, I think that a lot of what we're doing in universities is a demystification of institutions. Not that we have to dismantle the institutions, but we have to understand them. And the academic study of religion takes apart something that has been seen as off limits to a lot of intellectual and linguistic and political inquiry. So we're putting that on as subjects that can be discussed and taken apart and put together again. And I think there's enormous value in that, because if we don't do that, there are places in human consciousness and that hide from the light, and then all kinds of things can fester. We need to put a light on those things, and that's what happens in the academic study of religion. Not just that we're dissipating practices that could be very detrimental, but we're also letting in some of the other things that have been relegated to the vestigial state of religion, and that is compassion and beauty and sensitivity. Sometimes that gets all put into religion, when I think that we should be seeing that as more a part of our daily lives, our daily institutions. So studying both what is perhaps harmful in religious traditions and what is very good about what's been put there, I think we can have a better world.
So, Suzanne Owen, what is the public benefit of the academic study of religion?
You know that public benefit is a bad word now in academia.
Why is it a bad word now in academia?
I think it's because it's being dictated from government sources, that we need to now think about public benefit in order to justify our existence. And then, so this immediately just raises the hairs on many academics about whether they should be even concerned by this, and whether what's called maybe a pure academic study has no value. But of course it does. And it's a question of values in the end. And
And I'm just a bit worried about what is going to be funded in terms of studies of religion. And I'm worried that there's going to be a more superficial... there's going to be support for more superficial studies of religion through this need or to justify the study of religions for public benefit. Because really, I think the role of the academic should be more of a kind of cultural critic. And that is what I think scholars of the study of religion are, cultural critics, or they can be, I think. And that's the kind of scholarship I want to go into. And there are other scholars in the study of religions who might think otherwise. But I think this is a worrying issue, and I think we need to maintain this critical stance.
So being a cultural critic, does that benefit the public?
Yes, so that we don't fall into totalitarianism.
Wonderful.
Yes, there's a danger of falling into totalitarianism if we do not maintain our freedom of thought, really, in some ways, but also our independence from social trends and movements.
You've just been listening to our third compilation podcast there on the topic of the public benefit of the academic study of religion. This is the third of our compilation podcasts. We've got another two out there on the website. One answering the question, what is the future of religious studies? And one tackling the issue of should scholars of religion be critics or caretakers? So we thoroughly recommend, if you haven't heard them, to go and have a listen. And we've already started recording our fourth compilation episode, which will be coming out in the new year. As David has been mentioning in the past few podcasts, we've got quite a few exciting plans for the new year, but we're going to save those for the new year to let you know, since we will be entering into the second year of the Religious Studies project. Next week, our podcast is an interview that David recorded in September with Nick Campion on astrology and popular religion. So that is bound to be another popular podcast and starts another very brief series on new religious movements. We'll have Jim Lewis in there as well, another interview from Knut. But this ties in very well with a large amount of the other podcasts that we have had. We've had our recent NRM series there with Gordon Melton, Woodrow Hanegraaff, and Suzanne Owen. Later in this week, we've got something a bit new for you as well. We've probably mentioned it before, but we've got a book review podcast. It sort of takes the same format as some of our roundtable discussions, but four of us present a bit in a sort of interactive way about a book that we were given to review, and then we sort of have a sort of ad hoc panel discussion about it. But it was a very enjoyable experience to record, and hopefully it'll bring up some interesting issues and give you a good flavour for these four books. As always, you know, I'll rhyme off the usual thing. Check us out on Facebook, check us out on Twitter, and do rate us on iTunes. We've still only got 11 ratings, and I know we get well over 100 downloads from iTunes every week. So just, you know, if you could pop on there and give us a little star, that would be amazing. And apart from that, I have nothing more to say, so just thank you for listening, and greetings from Canada, where the wonders of technology are enabling me to get this to David to be edited into the podcast very quickly. So, yes, thanks for listening.